welcome to another episode of the Stumbled Upon podcast. I am your host, Kate, and each week we'll be taking a deep dive into a random topic that has sparked my interest. I hope that you're all having a wonderful day and that you are looking forward to the weekend. This week's topic is, well, they're all pretty random, I feel like, but this week's topic was inspired in a couple different ways. So the first being that a friend of mine who listens to the podcast suggested or asked me about looking into the history of words and language and where they come from. And then my nephew is about 15 months old right now, and he is in the stage of learning how to talk. And I just think it's really interesting to see where he is developmentally compared to a friend of mine has a child who just turned 2, and kind of where they each are with their words and language and how we all learn how to speak, really. So the origin of language is not well known. We don't really understand where language comes from, but there are a few different theories, and it is kind of interesting to sort of figure out the history of the study of language. So in the 1860s and 1870s, several academic societies banned the discussion of the evolution of language. One of them was a society in France, and then one of them was a society in London, both of them obviously having to do with the study of linguistics and language. I couldn't really find a clear answer as to why they had banned the study of the evolution of language. The sort of murky answers that I received is that it's probably because there was a lack of empirical evidence. So it was almost all speculation, and it was difficult to really come up with a conclusion. So the societies were like, look, we don't know. We're probably never going to know. So we're not going to waste our time even looking into it, which was sort of the vibe that I got from my research into why. Now, this ban actually influenced the field of linguistics in the West for nearly a century, and several prominent people in the field supported the ban. They were like, yep, nope, it's dumb. We're never going to know. So just leave it alone. We've got other things to study, other things to sort of figure out. And so it took a long time for scientists to even really publicly broach the subject. It wasn't until the 1990s when scientists from other fields like genetics, psychology, neurology, etc., really started looking at where language comes from, not just to understand where language comes from the perspective of like, well, how did this start, but to really understand where it comes from a brain chemistry kind of level. So is it something that we're just born with knowing how to do? Is it something that we had to learn? Where did it come from? Did it start one major event happened and the early humans were suddenly able to communicate with one another? Like, what exactly was going on? And so they found that language is a uniquely human trait, but scientists cannot find anything in our genetics or brain that explains it. So there's this geneticist at the Max Planck Institute for Psycholinguistics in the Netherlands named Simon Fisher, and he said, quote, "It may be that there is a network of genes that are important for syntactic processing or speaking proficiently, but there won't be a single gene that can magically code for a suite of abilities." So basically he was saying that, you know, it's not like we're going to find one specific gene and that's the language gene, right? It's they all work together in harmony type deal. It's going to be a network of genes that are turning on and off in various ways, right? I did, just as a side note, I did not know what syntactic processing was. So I looked that up, and it is the mental process of understanding and interpreting the structure of sentences based on grammatical rules. So, for example, identifying like the subject or the verb of a sentence, etc., things like that. So to clarify the uniquely human part of that, you may be like, well, other animals still communicate with calls and sounds and things, like dolphins, for example, and their clicks, or birds and their songs, or monkeys, and they can even like gesture for things. So What they mean by this being a uniquely human ability is that these animals that have the ability to pass information to each other using specific noises or gestures are certainly around, but they don't have a complex historical record of the world like humans do. So their information doesn't expand from generation to generation. So the example that they gave in the article that I was reading was dolphins, you know, teaching their young or other members of their pod about specific predators and things. So that is very like, hey, my generation is teaching the next generation that this shark is a predator, for example, right? Or this fish is a really great source of fuel. They don't have the capacity to say, you know, I have this language because my grandmother passed it down and she had actually come across this fish and it was so good and she was in the Gulf of Mexico when she found it and so she just loved it and so now that's why we come here to eat this fish, da 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 da. Like, they don't have that storytelling kind of history ability that humans do with our language. And just as a side note, it did say in one of the articles that I read that they estimate that humans were communicating verbally with one another like 300,000 years ago, but the written word did not start until 5,000 years ago. So there is like a vast amount of time between when they think we started talking versus when we started writing things down. So during that whole period of human history, nothing was getting written down. So it was all orally transmitted. That sounds weird. It was all oral tradition passing from one generation to the next of information and history and that kind of thing. So if you think of it in those terms, it makes sense to me why we don't know where it started, because that wouldn't have been helpful information at that time, right? We wouldn't have cared, oh, Joe down the street is the one who came up with the word for bear. We wouldn't have cared about that. It was the information that they were passing to each other that was important, not the start of the information, you know? So it makes sense that we don't actually know where it started, because it would not have been helpful information when language started. It wouldn't have been helpful information to pass down how it started when it started. So there's two main theories, according to language scientist Richard Futrell, about where language started. The first is that language started with people making different sounds, mostly imitating the things around them, like animal calls or the sounds of tools to identify what they're trying to talk about or what they're trying to communicate about. Then over hundreds of thousands of years, these sounds turned into words. And then at some point, people started putting the words together to form sentences. And eventually we get to our language of today. The other theory is that people started off by gesturing, which eventually became a full, complete sign language. Then eventually people started making sounds along with their signs, and then that switched to making mostly sounds. And the thought process behind this evolution is that you can speak words to someone even when you cannot see them and still communicate with them, whereas a gesture or sign language only language, you have to be able to see what somebody is saying to you. They know that the creation of a sign language is observable because if a large population of deaf people come together, they will spontaneously invent their own language within a few years. And the way they figured this out is in the 1980s, the Nicaraguan government opened a school to educate deaf children, and they all had been using their own basic signs at home with their parents. And so it was not a uniform sign language at that time. Then when these children all came together and were in the school together, they actually ended up forming their own unique language based off of their each individual signs that they brought from home. And it was actually a language that even the teachers didn't know at first. And it was a fully robust, like, complete language, which is so interesting. And because of this, scientists concluded that basic language wiring was in the brain, but it was enhanced and advanced by this social interaction between the children. Culture has a pretty significant role in the creation of language, because if you think about it from a basic standpoint, why do we have language? Well, it's because we're trying to communicate with somebody else, right? So there's a cultural component or a social component to language that really cannot be overlooked. And a man named Simon Kirby, who is a cognitive scientist at the University of Edinburgh, did a test to see how culture plays a role, or how that social interaction plays a role in the creation of language. So what he did is he built a digital model of speakers that he called agents, and then he fed them messy, random strings of language. Then he had his AI agents learn language from other agents, but then they also had to teach the language to other agents. So for example, so he'd teach Agent A this random string of words, right? And then Agent B had to learn the language from Agent A. And then once he learned it, or I say he, but it's AI, so it's not, doesn't have personal pronouns. Once it learned it from Agent A, then it would teach Agent C, and so on and so on. He then rolled over these generations of learners and teachers to see how the language would change, like a giant game of telephone, you know, where you tell one person one thing and then it goes around. Each person has to like whisper the secret or the statement or whatever to the next person until it finally gets back to the original person. And then you see how far off it got from the original message, right? So the findings were actually really interesting. So the digital agents had a tendency to produce more structure in their output than they received in their input. Even though the strings of language were random, sometimes by chance, a string might appear to have slight structure. The agent would recognize this appearance of what they thought was structure, and then they generalized it as a rule and would teach that structure to the next agent. But mind you, this structure was not actually there. These strings of words were totally random. It was just something that was perceived, which is wild. So then these changes were very, very tiny, but as they flipped from generation to generation, it snowballed. And not only did the language get more structured, it started to look like a simple version of what occurs in natural human language, which is crazy to me to think. No matter how many times he ran different models with different data, they all eventually found structure. So this helps explain why we can't find a single gene or mutation or brain circuit to explain language, because it doesn't exist. Language seems to come from a combination of biology, individual learning, and the transmission of language from one person to another. So it's this perpetual learning of this ability or of this concept that is actually what is pushing the language forward and making it into what we know today to be language. So all of that is interesting, I think anyway. And it goes into a lot more depth, or you can go into a lot more depth with it than that. That was sort of a high level overview of where language comes from, because again, scientists really don't know the answer to that question. So it's not like you can find a concrete answer to where language came from. So I guess that makes this topic kind of tricky, because it's like, well, here's some different options to choose from of where this thing came from, but we don't actually know where it came from. We just know that it exists, right? And it's one of those things, I think, where you could really go down the rabbit hole with this, again, because there is no strong answer one way or the other as far as where it came from. And because there's so many different factors of what created language, right? It wasn't, like I said, it wasn't just a gene that turned on and now all of a sudden we like know how to use language, right? It was small changes slowly over time that utilized things like genetics and our brains and how we communicated and the need to communicate. Because I would think, just from my own perspective, that it was the need to communicate with those that were around you that forced language to come about, because it doesn't make sense for anything else. Like, how else would we communicate with one another? Whether it be gestural sign language or spoken language, it makes sense that we had to figure some way out to communicate with each other, because how else would you have a community, right? How else would you explain to people? At this point, you know, we're just concerned about survival. We're not really concerned about, I would assume, I don't really know this to be 100% true, but I would assume at this point the concern is survival. It's not telling stories, although maybe it was telling stories. We're a very storytelling oriented group, so maybe there was storytelling. Regardless, how else would you communicate these ideas with the people around you if you don't have a way to signal what you're trying to say? I mean, just think about it. Like, how else would you say this berry is not poisonous or this berry is poisonous? Do you know what I mean? It makes sense that the circumstances surrounding the evolution of humans required that we figure out how to talk to each other or figure out how to communicate with each other. And then, because I think as a class or as a species, we're always pushing forward in progress. At least that's, I think we can all agree, is that through the evolution of human history, even just recent history, we have that drive to constantly be improving and pushing for more. And so it would make sense if that's a drive that's been with us forever, then the evolution of language would make sense to me. Anyway, so that tangent aside, I did look into how babies learn language because, like I said, my nephew is at the stage now where he's first learning words and how to communicate with people or communicate with those around him. And so I wanted to look in and see how babies learn to actually talk. At birth, infants' brains can perceive 800 sounds that are called phonemes, and these can be strung together to form all the words in every language of the entire world. So we'll let that sink in for a while. An infant has the ability to perceive the base units of sound that any language makes. And then it just depends on what language that's spoken around them that gets picked up, basically, is what happens in a nutshell. But to go into that a little bit deeper, the brain is most open to learning the sounds of a native language for just a few months. And it starts at 6 months for vowels and 9 months for consonants. Baby talk, or as it's now called, parent ease, helps babies learn the language by slowing it down and exaggerating the sounds. And then scientists also found that the higher pitch of baby talk seems to hold infants' attention and keeps them engaged in the parent or the caregiver speaking to them. And then again, that slow cadence of words and like elongating the words that you say helps them understand how these units of sound are connected in language. Lab studies have shown that babies use two different learning mechanisms to understand language. One mechanism recognizes sound through mental computation, and the other requires intense social immersion. Infants between 8 to 10 months still don't understand words, but they are highly sensitive to how often phonemes occur, so they can learn which are most important for their language. So basically, babies are using statistical analysis to figure out how to talk, which is mind-blowing if you ask me. So their brain has the ability to say, I hear this sound frequently, more frequently than other sounds. So this sound is important. And so that's how they start to learn language, is they pick up on which noises that we are making when we're speaking to them appear most often, and then by extension are most important towards learning how to speak. This learning is also not a passive process, but it requires human interaction. Babies who watch their caregivers' eyes receive social cues that help with understanding the meaning of actual words. They found that children who follow the direction of an adult's gaze pick up more vocabulary in the first 2 years of life than children who don't track these eye movements. And they found that even if you think about where language came from, like, it's a social thing, right? So it makes sense that babies need that social interaction with other humans in order to pick up the nuances of language and pick up the importance of language and kind of figure out how to talk. It's not just something that we're born with. The ability to recognize these patterns and recognize the importance of these sounds is with us when we're born, but it's that social component that really helps with the nuance of language and helps with our understanding of what parts of that language are important or what sounds are important for that language. And it also said that babies can recognize sounds that go together most often. So the example that they gave is, you know, when you're talking to a child and you say, who's a pretty baby? So pretty, when you elongate that sound, babies have the ability to expect the noise pre makes sense to have T come after it. So pretty baby, right? Where you don't often hear pre and then ba, as in like baby, right? So you wouldn't hear pre-ba. Like, that's not a word if you're speaking English, right? We're talking about English here. So if you're speaking English to a baby, then those sounds are not going to go together, and their brains have the ability to recognize this pattern or this statistical significance of where sounds come together most often. So that is the quick and dirty rundown of where language comes from. I'm sorry that I don't have an actual answer. I don't know that we'll ever have an actual answer to that question. Maybe one day we will. Who knows? But I hope that you found parts of that interesting. And in conclusion, like most evolutionary things, it doesn't seem like there will be a simple answer to the question of where language came from. But trying to solve the mystery has certainly brought forth some very intriguing findings about how our brains, genes, and social environment work together. While you might not necessarily care where language came from, I think that how we each use our language is something to keep in mind. And maybe just take a minute to stop and think about how amazing the use of communication is, whether it's complex human language or dolphins telling other dolphins about predators or birds teaching their young how to sing. So I hope that you learned something today, and I hope that you all have a wonderful rest of your day, and I will be seeing you next Friday.